Hey yo, what is a cipher?
You. The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
I'm forming the cipher, fly beast of the thought presenter.
Walking up in the cipher, smoking, talking about who won it.
We complete the cipher.
Complete the cipher, or make ends meet.
Where you think the cipher come from? The gods.
Welcome to the cipher, the beginning of rap.
Cause you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Sway Tim's on my beats makes my cipher complete.
The cipher.
Welcome to The Cipher. If you were expecting Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, don't worry, you're in the right place. And if you're new, welcome aboard. For all those who knew us as Outside the Lines, the show is the same in the most important respects. We still have in-depth conversations with fascinating hip-hop figures, and plenty of other folks as well. In the coming weeks, we'll naturally talk to rappers, producers, and DJs, but also to authors, photographers, and more. The other good news is we're bringing you more content than ever. We're shooting to bring you new episodes every Tuesday, and you can find our complete archive of 75 past episodes at thecyphershow.com. So why the new name? Well, for one, we're no longer associated with Rap Genius, and we wanted the title to reflect that. I really believe in this show and want it to be great. And while RG was incredibly helpful in getting us off the ground, the time has come for this podcast to fly by itself. The new name also reflects the priorities and feel of the show in very important ways. The term refers, of course, to rappers improvising together, interacting, and trading ideas back and forth. That, minus the actual rapping, for the most part, is key to this show. We try to trade ideas, interact, and ultimately come up with something new and exciting, exactly like the best rap ciphers. Also, in the supreme mathematics of the Nation of Gods and Earths, a group that is very influential in hip-hop, and that you should know something about if you've listened to the show before, the word cipher is associated with the number zero and means the completion of a circle or 360 degrees of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. The ideas of completion, connection, and knowledge are all key to this show. Our first episode as The Cipher features our friend Ritz. Ritz, as his cracker-branded name would indicate, is a white rapper. In fact, White Rapper is the name of his brand new single. He's from Gwinnett County, Georgia, just outside Atlanta. He plied his trade for about a decade in the ATL underground before finding his first success via his appearance on Yelawolf's Box Chevy Part 3. That verse landed Ritz a deal with Tech N9ne's Strange Music label, a perfect match for his Twista-influenced fast rapping style. Ritz's songs have always been open and confessional. He's talked about drug problems, drinking, relationship drama, and tons more. Next to Nothing continues that trend, while taking another step forward in terms of sound and style. We talked to Ritz at our new home, Crosstown Studios in Harlem, on the very day Next to Nothing was released. We discussed the album, of course, but we also talked A-Town past and present, the ups and downs of first finding success later in your career, the perils of rapping fast, how the 96 Olympics ruined everything, and a lot more. So here's the inaugural edition of The Cipher featuring Ritz. Welcome to The Cipher. I'm here with Ritz on the very day his album is released. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Yeah. Wanted to ask, you know, a bunch of things about the new record and a whole bunch of stuff. I wanted to start with Turn Down.
Right.
That's, you know, video, you know, one of the singles off it. So obviously kind of like goes against the turn up thing that's become cliche
right
at this point. Was there a moment when you realized that the whole turn-up thing had just become, totally played out?
I mean, well, to be honest, here's what happened with that song. I wrote that song, the hook, with the intention of a female singing the hook. So you turn up on me, I'm going to turn that bitch down, was the intention. But I couldn't get the female, so when I did it myself. I'm going to turn that bitch down, trying to turn up on me. I'm going to turn that bitch down. Because the original idea was like, some people say they're going to turn up on somebody like when they're fighting or something like that. So my whole thing going at it was like, if you try to turn up on me, I'm going to turn you down. But instead, it came across like, if you turn up, I turn you down. Like just all the, like the vibe and everything, like the word turn up. And the second verse, I did kind of go against the word turn up and everything else too. It's like, some stuff just gets so cliche and so overdone, you know? It was like, so I'm glad it got interpreted that way. And, you know, yeah, that it still goes on. I mean, it's going to go on for a while. It's a fairly new term, and who knows? We probably got another couple years of turning up. You know, we're not getting crunk anymore. We turn up.
Right. And, you know, that's obviously a phrase associated with Southern rap and stuff. And, yeah. Like, I know you're from Atlanta.
First of all, like, it came from, I had a show in St. Pete, and I was doing this show, and this guy, I see him stumble in. You could tell they wasn't part of the crowd. They were like some hood dudes or whatever that came in just wondering what the fuck was going on. And in the middle of the set, he was like, yo, turn up, turn up. So I kind of got, I got offended. Like, he was telling me my show wasn't live enough when really he was just being cool, just trying to say what he thought was cool to say. And I was like, hey, man, you keep on turning up, I'm going to turn you the fuck down. And then as soon as I said that, he looked shocked, like, whoa, how did he just do that? And then dude left. So, like, after that, that's why I made it. That's what it made me make that song.
Nice. Speaking of Southern rap and stuff, I know you're from Atlanta.
Yeah.
So the 90s Atlanta scene, there was, like, a couple of different things going on. There was, like, Atlanta bass. There was kind of the weirdo, like, organized noise, artsy side. Yep. And there was, like, So Def and the more commercial thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you were growing up and starting out, did you feel connected to any of those scenes?
Yes. I felt connected very much to pretty much to all of it. I mean, you know, a lot of it. You know, I'm from the suburbs of Atlanta, so a lot of it was looking out, like, what was going on in the city at that point in time, before, like, where I grew up at is really expanded. And then once it did, and that happened kind of after 96, so it was a short window from 94, from when Outkast first came out, to really not relating to it, just like, oh, that's going on downtown. I've seen those exits, East Point, College Park, Decatur, all that stuff, to where after the Olympics came, everything kind of blew up around Atlanta, so all those vibes from the bass music to organized noise and So Def. But I mainly related more to the organized noise thing that had a huge impact on me and I think the feeling of Atlanta that at that time, you know. And of course, So Def, you know, and it's no diss, they were very successful and they are very successful, whatever. It was more commercial, so it didn't really get put into that fold. You know, it was like, oh, that's Jermaine shit. But yeah, it was either bass music or organized noise at that time, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was heavily influenced, and with Kilo too. When Kilo came out, I forgot what the album was called, but when he came back out with like Love in Your Mouth. And like stuff like that, it had like a bass music feel. That was huge.
So were you rocking to Shy D and all that stuff?
Nah, I wasn't. I get that question a lot with Shy D. Nah, I really wasn't, man. I started my earliest Atlanta rap was Kilo, America's Got a Problem, and then it kind of moved up. There was a hitman, Sammy Sam, was a real like hood artist. Like I think he was from Mechanicville or I forgot where he was from, but hitman Sammy Sam's like a legend Atlanta rapper, and then you know, and like I said, Kilo, and then once Outkast and Goody Mob came out, it just changed my world, changed a lot of people's world, and pretty much the world of, I think, of Southern hip-hop.
Yeah. So you were talking about the Olympics.
Yeah.
And in my interview, you have this line about how the Olympics changed the area.
Yeah.
The
shit changed when the 96
Olympics came. What you mean?
Seems like you were saying it raised the crime rate or something. I wasn't
quite
sure.
Yeah, it was bad. It changed everything. Everything changed. Because, like, literally, I mean, it was night and day. Like, before it came, like, it was where I lived at. You could ride around with like a ounce of weed on your cops would pull you over and let you go. And if as long as it wasn't too much, they didn't feel like doing paperwork. It was like after the Olympics came, so much money came into that area. The surrounding counties boosted up the police force or whatever the proper word is to use for that. And everybody from everywhere moved, and so many apartments came up. So it was like so many New Yorkers and people from Cali and people from New Orleans and people from everywhere, Chicago, and it was just all these different, and people from downtown were moving up to Gwinnett, so it was like a melting pot of just different cultures. And they were all in these apartment complexes that are just right up and down. And that's where we was at. You know, we just go up and down. So, yeah, it was crazy because you look, it's a nice suburban area. But all types of bad shit was happening right next door to what was going on. So, I mean, if you could see both sides of life, however you wanted to, wherever you was chilling at, you know, you want to chill. But, yeah, it was crazy. Everything changed when the Olympics came. It immediately, the crime rate got crazy. And the cops, you know, putting people, locking people up got crazy too. So it just changed the whole community.
And your first hit, 770,
yeah,
kind of makes fun of some of that talk about the area gentrifying, right? You kind of joke around the, you know, it's a good place to raise kids. Great place to raise kids, save
just for retirement. When I'm yeah, so. And it looks like that, but it's really not, you know? There's like so many apartments, they look nice from the outside, but their names change constantly. The reason why the names change, somebody just got murdered in there. So like, if they change, like you just see a name on the apartment change, it's like, oh, there was a shooting over there. And it's like, but at the same time, you see like, you can really get confused down there, really what's going on, because you might live in a nice neighborhood and there'd be like an invasion and some gang shit going on next door. It's just weird. It's a big mix up of different lifestyle.
Are you still around in Northside or?
Yeah, I'm still there. I'm a little bit more out into the country, you know, a little bit. Started having fans showing up at my crib and stuff. I was, you know, when I was living with my girl and her mom, so it was like, yeah, I had to dip.
Yeah, you've been repping Northside and you know, Gwinnett County really hard, yeah. Pretty much since the beginning.
Always, man. There's been, I'm one of the original ones, but there's so many rappers from there. You know, there's a ton of rappers. There's a scene and that used to not get respect for a long time. You know, if I could do anything to help open up that door and keep screaming it, then I'm gonna do it. So I keep just repping it and hopefully, you know, it'll get taken serious. I think more people are blowing up from that area. So, you know, it's becoming, you know, everybody in Atlanta, it's like, are we from the east side, west side, south side? Now they're shouting north side on the radio. Not due to me, just due to, you know, a lot of people repping.
Yeah. So on the new record, on Living a Dream and Broken Famous, both of those focus on this idea that things in the music business aren't how they seem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, just because you're on TV or you're in magazines, you're not rich. Just because you're on a track with someone doesn't mean you're their best friend.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And that's not an illusion that a lot of artists like to puncture. And I was
curious why
you talk about that so much.
Well, in Living a Dream, I talked about it because you go on tour and it's like, yo, when's the last time you talked to Tech? When's the last time you talked to Wolf? When's the last time this? And you guys need to do this. And oh, I bet I can't wait to chill with you guys and blah, blah. And it's like, yo, Tech and Wolf are my friends. You know, they're my boys, but we're very busy. Like, this isn't a WWE. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like there's a lot of honesty in the music that I feel like I owe to tell that to a lot of people, because a lot of my fans are aspiring rappers. So with Living a Dream, that was more like saying that about, you know, just because you're on a song with somebody doesn't mean that you're just every day together. And and also talking about just because you sell records doesn't mean you're rich or, you know. But yeah, Broken Famous is more like constantly getting noticed and constantly getting stopped and pictures taken with you and feeling like a celebrity, but being broke at the same time, and then everyone around you thinks you're not. And when I say broke, I'm using it loosely, like, but not really having a lot, like, you know, and people look at you like you do, even family members, it's weird, you know. I come off tour, you could tell, like, my sister's been talking, my nephew will be like, yo, Uncle Johnny's got money now, he's rich, and how much did you make, you know, and it's crazy.
Wow. One of the most personal songs on that record is Turning Up the Bottle.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
And the thing about that caught my ear was you talk about your and your partner's issues with drinking and drugs.
Yeah.
Really openly. She was detoxing. He did meth to it, held them write songs, but they quit writing shit the minute she got clean. You would think that things got better, but they didn't, because instead of doing drugs. You know, in rap, there's so much talk about partying and drinking and drugs. Why do you think that side of it, of like the real issues that sometimes go up around it?
First of all, people have problems in regular life admitting the problem with partying and drinking. You know what I'm saying? If we all have addictions or anything, we don't really want to come to grips with really what's wrong with it. You know, with me, was more like, we got clean off of drugs and turned it right into alcohol. And then, you know, and just I've seen alcohol just deteriorate us, and I've seen alcohol deteriorate families. And it was just me like really saying how alcohol can do that, you know. And I don't, you know, that doesn't get talked about a lot. Like you said, I mean, it's just being real about how it happens. And it's not to bum anybody out, but it's also awareness, and it's what really goes on in my real life, you know? So it's like, I wanted to bring that away. And it's exactly how me and my girl met. And it's the realest song there is on the album. I mean, as far as verbatim of what I go through in life, you know?
You know, on a lighter note, yeah. You mentioned WWE a minute ago. I know, yeah. Prophet makes that reference to Hulk Hogan's theme song.
Yeah, I am a real slum African.
Yeah. Who was your favorite pro wrestler when you were growing up?
Oh, Hulk Hogan by far.
Yeah, why?
Yeah, I cried, man. I was at Pittsburgh Civic Arena, man. There was a guy, I think his name was Kamala, African guy. He was going to fight Hulk, and Hulk was coming to the ring, and I was like, Dad, Hulk's going to lose. So I started crying, man. And, Hulk was the man. Like, I got all the old wrestlers, the rubber ones and stuff. Like, it was dope, man. I was really, but yeah, Hulk Hogan. That was just a Hulk Hogan guy.
Amazing.
Crazy.
Listening to, you know, you're rapping these a bunch of records and preparing for this. One of the things about your style that jumped out at me was you have a lot of internal rhymes, a lot of like really dense rhyme patterns.
Yeah.
But it's not like showy, you know, like if you're not really listening, you almost wouldn't notice they're there.
Yeah.
And I was curious about like how you developed that aspect of your style, this idea of having a lot of dense rhymes, but not necessarily emphasizing all of them so that everyone gets it.
Yeah, that's weird because my purpose is to try to emphasize them so everyone gets it. But I guess, if it doesn't come across like that, it just kind of flows. I mean, I spend a lot of time trying to make those rhymes, trying to get a notice for those rhymes flowing and being intricate in between words. And I think it's something that I try really hard on. But even like if it's a song like A Turn Up the Bottle where it's coming out the heart, and I'm just rhyming, just my natural ways, just it always ends up rhyming in and out of patterns. I've just trained myself when I write to do that. So it's what I love about writing, and it's what I hate about writing because I drive myself insane trying to be perfect, you know? And
yeah.
And like you said, if it goes unheard sometimes, it's a little bit frustrating to me because I try so hard to make it, you know, that's what I try to be good at or pride myself on being good at.
And another thing about your style is like not just the rhymes being, you know, dense, but like use a lot of different rhythms, a lot of different flows.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, man, because a lot of people say that I sound the same on every song and I'm like, yo, what are you talking about? Like, another thing, I spend a lot of time trying to find rhythms. I think it's the rapping fast thing. It's like when you rap fast, it's really, to an average listener, they're just hearing fast rap. But somebody who can listen, they can notice the different patterns of fast rap. But so, you know, I try hard to switch it up as much as I can to make those patterns. And when somebody notices it, it's, you know, it's appreciated.
Where do the rhythms come from? Do you like listen to other instruments or?
Sometimes it comes from, I think a lot of times me doing cadences. So it's like, you know, someone's in the fin of Vadine, the D's, V, the key, the V. You know, I'll start like doing that. So then start putting the words in place. A lot of it, to be honest with you, was Eminem influence. You know, he was probably my biggest influence as far as syllable matching and stuff like that. I'd never heard nobody do it to that extent before. I mean, you know, people always say, even with Tupac, they're like, you know, Tupac is, they'll say he's the greatest rapper of all time. And they're like, yo, Tupac really wasn't that lyrical. But really, when you listen to it, in my opinion, his syllables always match so nice. Even if they were playing, he was one of the original syllable matchers that kind of started that. I think just influences like that have a lot to do with me doing that. I just kind of overdo it sometimes and try to make everything go perfect.
I was talking to Saul Williams about that. Saul was in, if you know him, he was in that Tupac musical. And he was saying the exact same thing, that people say Pac's not lyrical, but that's totally not true. That there's like stuff he, you know, flow patterns he invented even.
Yeah, I mean, all types of flow patterns that he invented that is popular in modern rap today and will always be. You know, that, and that annoys me when people say that, because it's like, if you really listen and look at the time and when he was out, he was ahead of his time.
Yeah, that first record was like 91 or something. Like, it was early.
But I mean, and the same thing with another syllable guy, Big L. Big L was real syllable, you know, a lot of syllables going on with Big L, so.
Yo, fuck all the glamours and glitz. I plan to get rich. I'm from New York and never was a fan of the Knicks.
Yeah, you referenced Big L on the new record,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, my first album, man. You could tell where they got the whole style from. Yeah, Big L. To be honest, I didn't really hear too much of Big L till after he passed and put out the album after he passed, And I was amazed, so I just went back and did all my homework and started listening and was crazy influenced by Big L. So that really helped out my flow a lot, too, is, you know, matching syllables.
Yeah. So your album cover is homage to a record I really love, that Too Short record, Born to Mac.
Yeah. Well, I was going to do it like Born to Mac, but when it came for me sitting in the car, it didn't really work out. You know, because we took a bunch of different pictures, so that just me kneeling in front of the car ended up being the best one.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's classic to me. It's, you know, it's a lot of album covers next to cars and stuff. But I like doing that because to me it's just classic rap shit that never gets old.
Yeah, definitely. Being from Atlanta, something that just came up, I was curious about your take on the whole, you know, Atlanta Hawks owner thing.
Oh man, I have no idea. I have no clue about the Atlanta Hawks.
Okay, an owner of the Hawks just a few days ago sent an email, or sort of self-reported that he had sent an email saying that, like, Hawks games were, the audience at Hawks games were too black, and he was worried about that, and how's he going to sell tickets to middle-class people?
Oh, wow.
And then he, you know, basically told the NBA, hey, I wrote this thing, it's terrible, I'm selling my share of the team.
Damn, yeah, what an idiot. Plus, it's like, it's Atlanta, like, what the fuck you expect? Everybody that goes to Atlanta, man, I mean, it's some shit, it is what it is, man.
Yeah.
Fuck out of here, man. Be happy people at your game. I don't think that's stopping any white people from coming to see the basketball game.
Yeah.
You know, I just think, you know, maybe they don't feel like seeing the fucking Hawks.
So, I was, getting back to the record, you sang on Blow the whole way through.
Yeah, it's my manager's favorite song, by the way. My manager's favorite song, just had to throw that in. He hates that fucking song. He begging me not to put it on the album, and he just hates it. And I love the fact he hates it, man. It makes me so happy. I just got some drink. I just hit some earth.
Took a couple shots. Instantly, I got the urge. Is that the first time you've sung the whole way through?
It is. And I was originally going to do it as an interlude, you know, a one verse interlude. But once I got the hook in there, I was like, oh, shit. I was like, no, this got to be a song. It was one of those where I actually, which I don't normally do, like I have my boys in a room and like I'm start singing the hook and we're all like high five and like, oh, and it was just a fun time. So I was like, no, I'm making this a song and it's going on the fucking album. Fuck it. So yeah, that was the first time. I enjoyed that, man. It was awesome. There is rap singing, you know, I really wasn't. Doing runs and shit.
Yeah. But well, you sang a lot of hooks on this record.
Yeah. I like to sing hooks. I mean, my mind, first of all, I love 90s R&B too. I was heavily influenced by that. So it's like when I write hooks, I don't go into chant mode. I go into melody mode always, first and foremost. So I almost have to force myself to not do that on certain records.
And I know on this record, on this album, you have a song with Twista. Yeah. Who I know is a big influence in the whole like chop and double time thing.
The number one influence to me in that area of rapping, like, it was amazing, man.
Are there any other people doing the double time thing who you listen to, who, you know,
well, Tech,
our listeners
of course,
might not know about?
Tech, of course. But when I was growing up, Bone, Twista, and I think when Biggie did it on the Bone song, that showed me that, hey, everybody can kind of dabble in this and show that you can do it. And then people have been doing it over time, but Twista is by far my main influence with that. And to actually have him on a record with me is just huge. I mean, I rode around to Adrenaline Rush for years. You know, it's an album I'd probably bought maybe five times, you know, so. And we just shot a video for it, so it's crazy.
And so who can rap faster, you or Tech?
Oh, Tech. People always say that at shows, who's faster? Yeah, but like, yeah, Tech's a maniac, man. Tech is amazing, man, with that fast rap.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really pride myself on rapping fast. I just pride myself on putting nice content while I'm rapping fast.
Yeah. So on Wait Jesus, you have this line about with how most new artists are young. You say the majority is young. In the industry, noticing the majority's young. Cocky motherfuckers that ain't so important. They just wanted my fun. They got me thinking I'm I was just curious about, like, you found success a little bit later in your career than some artists, and I was curious, like, what you thought was good about that and what you thought was bad about it.
The bad thing about it is time is ticking on me, and so it's like, you know, that's the bad news, that it happened later. It's like, you know, I could have had two things. I would have had a lot more fun doing it when I was 10 years ago, but at the same time, I'd probably be fucking dead because I was an idiot 10 years ago, and, you know, I probably would have, you know, mismanaged it. I think that it kind of happened for me at an older age because I'm mature and with finances or just with reactions and my just I have a decent set of mindset right now, you know. But that's the good side. It happened to me now for a reason, I think, because I'm smarter. And but it would have been a lot less. It would have been a lot more fun touring when I was having it to be young. But I've been doing it for a long time, and it finally happened. So
yeah, I wanted to ask about that. I, you know, read interviews and stuff that you were doing mixtapes from the time you were 15.
Yeah.
But like the first, I think the earliest music I could find from you was that After Morning Signal single,
Which
was like 2008.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's the rest of the stuff? Buried in the vault somewhere?
Yeah. Well, what happened was like there's probably some local kids that got the stuff and have CDs buried, like, or tapes buried, you know. What happened was technology would change. Like, we used to put out tapes, and then, you know, people would lose the tapes, or tapes go away, and then you put out CDs, and then I had some drives crashed that just lost everything. So, you know, a lot of it has to do with losing material from a computer.
Cool. Okay, so last thing. I know you're a big shoe guy. What's the latest addition to your shoe collection?
Shout out to my boy Tony Footwork. I just got some Jordan Lab 5. See, it's so weird. I'm a big shoe guy, but I'm not into it where I know, like, the names. I just know them. Like, man, I got the J's with the reflector tongue on them, but they're this. Like, but, yeah, I got a couple new pair of J's, and, like, I got these little tags on the side that are, like, custom Nike tags. You know how they normally put the Nike shit hanging off? So I got, like, next to nothing custom Nike tags and Crown Royal custom tags. But, yeah, that's my newest. I'm really into Patrick Ewing's right now. The Patrick Ewing's are coming back around. I'm really into those right now. So I got a purple pair of those just to show out on stage. So, yeah, they're dope.
Amazing. And one super quick thing that we'd like to ask everyone. What's one record you really love that people would be surprised to know that you're a big fan of?
One record I love?
Yeah.
Oh, man, tons of stuff, man. I mean, I listen to all kinds of stuff, man. Rascal Flatts, Carrie Underwood. I listen to some country music. I listen to oldies. I like the Old Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack. Like, I like Metallica. I like tons of stuff, man. '80s music. That's what I like listening to when I'm depressed. Man, I put on some sad ass '80s songs. Def Leppard, Love Bites. Fuck y'all know about that. How about She's Like the Wind is what I love right there. Dirty Dancing soundtrack. One of the greatest songs of all time. Rest in peace, Patrick Swayze. He sung on that motherfucker. That shit is amazing.
R.I.P. We'll be looking for the posthumous Patrick Swayze Ritz duet. She's like the wind. There you go. All right. Thanks a lot for coming by, man. And best of luck on the record.
Thank you very much, bro. Appreciate the interview.
One of the things that was really fascinating around this interview was Ritz talking so much about syllable matching and kind of, you know, how he got that from Eminem and how he works really hard on it and all that kind of thing. And truth be told, this may come across in the interview, I actually felt a little bad when he seemed surprised about how I mentioned that stuff doesn't seem obvious in his work. I meant it as a compliment. I meant it as, you know, it sounds natural, and when you dig a little deeper, you discover another level of all these rhymes. And he seemed to almost take it in a way of, you know, saying that, like, his hard work wasn't really obvious, and I felt a little bad about that, honestly. Since this interview happened, I've also had my head pretty deep in early Atlanta rap. I knew a little bit about A-Town Bass, as you can kind of tell in the interview. I knew a few artists and was talking about that. But since this happened, I've been listening to Kilo Ali and Sammy Sam and some of the other artists he mentioned in the interview. It's really, really great stuff if anyone is interested in, you know, Southern rap and different, you know, regional rap more broadly. Which to me is an endlessly fascinating topic. You should definitely dig into some of these records. Also, the stuff about the 96 Olympics was really, really interesting. I had no idea about the kind of influence it had on the city and on the suburbs in all sorts of ways, positive and negative. And we didn't even get into the thing most people remember about the 96 Olympics, which was unfortunately the bombing that happened there. in the aftermath of that, which I'm sure added a whole other level to the stuff that was going on. Maybe if we have Ritz on as a follow-up, we can get into that. It was really good to see him. I'd actually met him once before at Rap Genius when he came through. And he's just such a really genuine, nice guy. And I was really glad to have him as the first guest for this new era of the podcast. All of the folks at Strange Music, all of the people I've met there, from the intern up to Tech Knight himself, have been really friendly, really accessible, really genuine. And I'm happy to have someone from that family begin this era of the podcast. With the revamping of the podcast, one of the things that's most important is you. I really need your feedback in order to keep this show going and to make it the best it can possibly be. You can hit me basically anywhere, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at The Cypher Show. So get at me there. And I know I say this at every single episode, but I want to reiterate that reviewing and subscribing to the show on iTunes is super, super, super important. Those are the metrics that all kinds of people use and look at to figure out which shows they want to mess with. So the more of you who do that, the better chance we have at having this continue to be a great show and getting the kinds of guests that we want and that you want to hear. So thank you so much for listening and for hanging with us during the little bit of time it took to make this transition. I hope you enjoy The Cypher, and we'll see you next week. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sitaro.
It doesn't mean you're rich.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
I just kind of overdo it sometimes and try to make everything go perfect.
Our theme music is by 42 Ghosts.
When I write hooks, I don't go into chant mode. I go into melody mode always, first and foremost.
Our new website, thecyphershow.com, was put together by Paul Dice.
As long as it wasn't too much, I didn't feel like doing paperwork.
And we'd like to send a special thank you and goodbye to our longtime intern, Julia Hannafin, who has been an invaluable part of this show for a really long time. She is moving on to do all sorts of awesome things, including, you know, finish college. Thank you so much, Julia, for all your hard work. You'll always be a part of the Cypher family.
She's like the wind through my tree.
Make sure to join us next Tuesday for a new episode of The Cypher. We'll see you then.
Oh. Yeah, that's a good idea. Right, I'm going to drink one of these and go buy a pair of shoes. I think I might drink one of these.